This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM in good old McLean County and Bloomington Normal, 88.3 in Pontiac, 97.1 in Lincoln, covering much of central Illinois, up and down the good old double nickel, Route 55, all the way from Dwight to Sherman. We're brought to you, of course, from our website. I want to point out our website, CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Remember, we're brought to you by you. That's what I meant to say, is we are brought to you by you. And so we depend on you, the listeners out there, to keep us going. So if you are able to make a donation, we would very much appreciate it. And you can do so, again, by going to CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. And if you go to that website, it'll tell a lot about ourselves, and there could even be a part that you can play. And the big or small, we would appreciate any donation that you can make. We're going to have a great show for you today. I'm usually here with my wife, Lynn, but she was not able to make the show today. She'll certainly be back next week. Remember, last week we talked about the Eucharist. And we were talking about the basic needs for all Catholics to be well-schooled in their faith and to go back to the basics, such as the major sacrament of the Eucharist. Next week, we will do Eucharistic miracles. We were thinking of doing that today, but my wife was handling that, and she just is not able to make it here today. She will be able to be back next week, and so we will talk about those Eucharistic miracles. But it's very, very important that with things the way they are, we should be able to defend our faith, and we should all Catholics, I think, be moving toward a very orthodox view and stance on Catholicism, because we are a divided America. There is a lot of animosity against Christianity in general and against the Catholic Church in particular. We're seeing a lot of that up in Canada, with all kinds of accusations flying around and charges being made that are not really investigated or substantiated the way they should be. And so what's going on in the country, and what is it really that is dividing us, and how is it working, and why is Christianity being attacked, and why is Catholicism being attacked? I'm going to read from an article in Chronicles Magazine, a magazine I subscribe to, today, and Chronicles is put out by the Charlemagne Institute, formerly the Roxburgh Institute, and they are a very, very Catholic-oriented organization. They have a lot of writers that are Catholic, and some, of course, that are not, and it's not a particularly Catholic magazine, but that is along a line, along their thinking, and they are also what we would call today a conservative magazine. And there's a very good article in there by Paul Gottfried, who is the editor of Chronicles. And he writes an article trying to explain what is really happening in our country today. There are a lot of people on the right, as he is saying, who seem to sort of understand everything in terms, nowadays, in terms of Marxism. He talks specifically about Mark Levin and Mark Levin's book, American Marxism. We're not going to go into that too much from this. But the point he's making is that it's not really Marxism that is driving the divide in our country today. It's something else, and that will be revealed and uncovered as we go along with the article. But at any rate, we're going to try and understand what's going on. And it isn't, again, a lot of the people on the right have a misunderstanding of what Marxism is. As Paul points out, the ideas of about Marxism and communism and socialism are a lot left over from the Cold War. And he's pointing out that it's necessary to get away from that idea of the Cold War and of Russia and of communism as what's driving what's going on in America. There are a lot of people in America on a lower level from what's driving our divide. that do dress up in a sense as Marxist or maybe think along socialist lines or leftist, socialist Marxist lines left over from the Cold War. But it's really something else that is going on. And I hope that this article will make that more clear. And again, it's important because the fact is that a lot of this, what's going on, this Marxist tactics, of course, are being used, but a lot of it is directed against Christianity in general and against the Catholic Church in particular. And we as Catholics need to understand, if we're going to be taking one side or another, we need to really understand exactly what's going on and be prepared for perhaps this divide getting worse. I'm hoping that I'm wrong and that a lot of things can be ameliorated and that the split in America can be healed and our divisions can be put back together and we can move on to something better. But right now, it really doesn't look that way. Again, I hope I'm wrong and that will not be the case. But at any rate, let's go into this article, and it's called, it's in the editorial page, and this is the July issue, in case anyone wants to get it, of Chronicles, and the whole issue is dedicated to the idea of a divided America. So if you get the July issue, the current issue of Chronicles, you'll be able to read the article for yourself. But it says here, it says, American institutions have been allegedly occupied by Marxists who are waging a war against the American Revolution, according to conservative commentator Mark Levin. Demonstrating how this alleged occupation occurred is at the core of Levin's American Marxism, a work driven to the top of the bestseller lists by conservative book clubs and Fox News. And then Paul Gottfried goes on to say, not surprisingly, given his role as a TV controversialist, Levin doesn't exhibit a lot of real knowledge of Marxism as a system of thought or a body of knowledge. And he points out that Levin is not the only person that he's trying to criticize here to some extent, that there are others that take up the idea of Levin in the same way. And we're certainly not, and neither is Paul Gottfried, denying that there are a lot of totalitarian tactics or Marxist tactics, a lot of divisive tactics being used by the radical left in his country and pushed because these things work in order to advance a cause. And so they look very much like Marxism, but according to Paul Gottfried here, it's not really what is going on, and it's not really Marxism that is driving what's happening on the left, even though a lot of people on some levels of the left might think that that's the case also. But at any rate, it says here, for those of us who are serious about what is now befalling Western societies, it may be necessary to throw away Cold War slogans and to look at credible explanations for recent political developments. As far as I can figure out, according to Paul Gottfried says, there are two main factors beyond Marxism that have produced the cultural, moral, and political crises now besetting the West. And those are the power of the counter-revolutionary left and the takeover of our vital institutions by advocates of intersectionality. And what he means here by intersectionality is this general idea that there is a minority in this country that is being oppressed, and they are the oppressed class, and then there is the power class in this country who are the oppressors, and they are the oppressor class, and that the worst people who are oppressed are not only minorities, but there are minorities who also suffer from more than one minority flaw, according to the oppressor class. For example, it would be someone who would be, say, black, but at the same time that someone who is black and also transgender, or at the same time that someone who is a woman, women seem to be, according to the left, an oppressed class in America. And if you were a woman and let's say you were a lesbian, you would be more oppressed than just a woman alone. And there's this idea of intersectionality, and that's what Paul Gottfried is referring to when he says intersectionality. In other words, there are two things, the power of the counter-revolutionary left that is dividing us, and also the takeover of our vital institutions by advocates of intersectionality, that there are certain people who are more oppressed than anybody else. He goes on. He says, looking at the divide in American society that several contributors to the July issue examine, one notices how certain forces on the left work in lockstep. Consider the orders issuing from our Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, to fly the LGBTQ rainbow flag over American embassies. Blinken has advocated that American embassies should fly the LGBTQ rainbow flag. Of course, this would be an example of intersectionality, that these people are made up of minorities, but also minorities often who suffer from more than one so-called minority flaw, and that they are more oppressed than others, and that they need some kind of a special treatment or a special recognition to offset the treatment they get by the oppressor group. And this is this divide that it seems to be dividing our country, at least at part of that, and at any rate. He goes, Blinken encourages these institutions to decorate their buildings with Black Lives Matter banners. The government pushes radical leftists, although not recognizably Marxist, projects such as requiring the teaching of CRT, and that's critical race theory, in public schools and the military. And I want to point out that this critical race theory is something that is taken from Marxism. Marxists, in order to undercut a society, came up with this idea of just critical theory. In other words, the idea is to attack every institution of a particular culture or country relentlessly and find something wrong with every single institution in order to demoralize the country and also in order to confuse and divide its culture. And so this idea of criticizing critical theory means if a country is to be overcome or taken over, criticize all the institutions in that country until people themselves in it begin to believe that these institutions are flawed and are not good, and the lack of support will help the country divide, and it will make it much easier for a Marxist to replace these institutions with their own. And so that's what critical theory is, and critical race theory is a particular form of critical theory that is going on in our country right now. He goes on. He says, these policies then gain the instant, exuberant approval of academics, the media, legal professionals, corporate executives, and clergymen. So these things that they're pushing are things that are also near and dear to a lot of these people in the first place. And a lot of these people themselves at some level sometimes think of themselves as socialists or Marxists, communists along that line. And so it makes it look as if what's going on is a form of Marxism and it's being pushed from the top. But that's not what's really happening. It is the tactics are Marxist, but the people pushing it certainly are not Marxist, as we'll see as we go along. It says, those in command are furthering the state ideology or pseudo-religion. And there is where, of course, this becomes relevant to our own religion, our own Catholicism, our own Christianity, and Christians in general, because a lot of these things become a cult or a pseudo-religion, and these pseudo-religions are used to further the agenda of people who want money and power, and a lot of that is what is going on. It says, the announcement by Blinken commemorating the anniversary of George Floyd's death that white Americans have a racist past should be seen as blatantly self-serving. Those in power are seeking to crush their opposition as right-wing extremists and to use programs like CRT and gender studies to restructure American society. Yet since corporate executives play a giant role in buttressing the present regime, it is ridiculous to claim we are living through a socialist revolution, as those who pin all our woes on Marxism often do. And I think that's where the criticism of people like Mark Levin was coming in. It's not that Mark doesn't have his finger on what's going on in America, and it's certainly not that Mark doesn't understand that we are being divided. And it certainly isn't because there aren't Marxist tactics being used. All of those things that Mark Levin talks about are true. But the idea that somehow the people at the top are seeking to institute Marxism is where Mark and others on the right are missing the mark. He goes on. He says that a transnational capitalist class is driving this radicalizing process for its own ends is closer to the truth. And I think that's where the right has a very large blind spot. There is almost this uncritical advocacy anymore of capitalism as opposed to Marxism, that a lot of the people on the right, people who are conservative, both religiously and conservative politically or in other ways, look at things as if somehow capitalism is highly opposed to Marxism and Marxist tactics. But that's not necessarily true. And they are reluctant to actually criticize or attack capitalism. Instead, they're looking as if capitalism somehow is being manipulated and used by Marxism. And that may be true to a certain extent, but there are a lot of capitalists, as this article says, that are not just doing things to keep Marxist tactics off their backs. There are a lot of capitalists jumping in on the whole scheme that is going on here to gain power and money, and are using these are sort of like in bed with this idea of state power to feather their own nests. And so a lot of that is what's going on, and often the right seems to be overlooking it. Again, that a transnational, not just here in this country, but throughout a lot of the rest of the world, a capitalist class is driving this radicalizing process, using these Marxist-oriented people and these Marxist tactics for its own ends. And those own ends are certainly not Marxist. So we're going to stop here and take a break. We'll come back after the break and talk a little bit more about what is actually going on. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
July 26th is the Feast of St. Anne, Mother of Mary and Grandmother of Jesus. Make plans now to join the 141st Annual Novena and Celebration honoring this saint at the National St. Anne Shrine in St. Anne, Illinois, a small town near Kankakee. 7 p.m. Masses begin on the 18th. And then, on July 26th, there will be three special Masses at 10, 12, and 2, a procession through the town, veneration of her miraculous relic, and the sacrament of anointing. St. Anne Catholic Church grounds will also be the site of an afternoon organ recital, a children's hour, plus religious items and lunch for sale. It's a beautiful event. Learn more at their website, stannestanne.org. That's stannestanne.org, or by calling 815-427-8265.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're back from our break. We're talking about the division in our country, and we're talking about editorial in Chronicles magazine written by Paul Gottfried, the editor of Chronicles. And he's talking about how the right, the conservative, whatever you want to label it, is mislabeling what's going on in our country, causing this divide, as Marxism, when it's really not being driven by Marxism. And we talked about a transnational capitalist class that is driving the radicalizing process for its own ends. And that is being much closer to the truth than the idea that Marxist institutions are actually driving this, even though, as I pointed out, and as Paul Gottfried also acknowledges, that a lot of Marxist tactics are being used, and a lot of what's going on looks like Marxism, but it's really not being driven by Marxism. And Paul Gottfried goes on to say, this does not exclude the deep state from being a part of this power-sharing arrangement. More than one interest can benefit from the chaos and destruction befalling the rest of us. And there is a lot of chaos and destruction that is going on in our country, and we should all be very, very aware of this and be very concerned about it. And I think there's probably a lot more to come, and maybe the real storm is not yet with us, even though we're in the midst of a lot more than most people realize. And I hope that this division can be healed and that I'm wrong and that it won't get worse. But we as Catholics should understand that it might. And this is not just a secular or not just a political issue. A lot of this also goes deeper than that. As Paul Gottfried pointed out, a lot of what's going on is actually being done as a pseudo-religion. And I've so often pointed out on this show many, many times that all principles are at bottom religious, and all ideas and causes and so forth along those lines are often driven by religious impulses. Man is a religious creature, and he can't escape that. And so this is something that affects Catholicism. And, of course, the basic principles of Catholicism are what actually built Western civilization. And we're at the bottom a lot of our laws, whether it's Catholicism or Christianity taken further than Catholicism into Protestantism. A lot of things in our society are at bottom religious, and the principles are at bottom, ultimately going back all the way to the principles first laid down by the Catholic Church. So that's why a lot of these things are so important to us. We should be aware of what's going on and how it relates to us. He goes on. He says, the intersectional ideology accompanying this process does not go back, strictly speaking, to Marxist sources, although some of those who contributed to building the contemporary left may decorate themselves with Marxist labels. Instead, we are speaking here about a power grab. In a perceptive analysis on how democracy went from being majoritarian to the starkly powerful totalitarian, Polish political theorist Zbigniew Janowski observes in his book Homo Americanus, The Rise of Totalitarian Democracy in America, that democracy can be non-ideological, meaning an electoral mechanism of the majority that in itself does not hide a blueprint for any specific organization of society. In fact, for a long time, democracy allowed individuals in the West to conduct their business without encroaching on their cultural and historical traditions. But then, this method of electing rulers turned more ominous, with disastrous consequences for both freedom and cultural traditions. And this is what's going on more in America today. The idea of our own democracy being turned into a totalitarian direction, and we are seeing that now. It has morphed into an ideology featuring the language of rights. And don't we hear that so much anymore? Rights after rights after rights after rights, all conflicting with one another. We even have a lot on the left talking about one right trumping another right and so forth. I mean, we are actually devolving and falling into a totalitarianism of rights, of people being the majority instead of being in charge, are being beaten down by so-called minority rights and so-called individual rights everywhere. And, of course, human beings don't live that way. Human beings are social creatures, and they have to have an individuality, but they also have to have a social system, and some of that individuality has to be put aside for the good of the whole. And everyone can't have everything the way they want. And people are using these individualist ideas actually to drive their own agenda and get what they want as a group over everybody else. And worse, At the very top, according to Paul Gottfried here, there are people who are in the most powerful positions of our society that are using this whole called rights language and rights ideas and Marxist tactics themselves to drive things in a direction that favors them and gives them power and, of course, also money. And that's what Paul Gottfried here is talking about, the idea of a plain old-fashioned power grab dressed up more as some kind of a social movement and social justice and individual rights and tactics that make it look as if somehow at the top it is Marxist when it is really not. So we're doing, going along a line of democracy here that we never had anything to do with before and that never had anything to do with how societies actually conducted themselves until now. For someone like Janowski, who can remember communist rule in his native Poland, it is apparent those human rights demonstrations the contemporary left can throw together almost anywhere in a few hours to protest some imagined fascist evil are endless imitations of communist organized events. But unlike communist parades and demonstrations that were arranged by cynics, these democratic manifestations are organized mostly by scared and young fearmongers or adults with an adolescent outlook on life. And when he talks here about young, scared fearmongers, he's talking here about a lot of young kids who are afraid of their academic teachers and professors. Universities have a tremendous power anymore. And they are also afraid of the cancel culture. You could just see that on the news the other day. I was watching interviews asking about what's going on in Cuba. And you could just see that almost every person, and this was done on a college campus, every person that talked about it and answered it was afraid to actually explain why these Cubans were waving American flags and were identifying themselves with America. Of course, we all know that the Cubans that look at to America as being the land of the free and the land of liberty, and they're looking at the American flag as standing for that. But these college kids were afraid to say that. They're afraid to say that because they have to answer in terms that will not offend the radical left on campus or their radical professors on campus and be subject to, if they do, be subject to the cancel culture that will come down on them. And so that's what he's talking about when he says these organizations are organized mostly by scared and young fearmongers or adults with an adolescent outlook on life. He goes on here and he says, the intersectional left, in any case, has a ready-made army that will march and demonstrate at the drop of a pin. It will also call for boycotts of any business or educational operation that does not fall in line with the evolving programs of social transformation favored by its leaders. Again, there's a reference to what's going on with these kids. They're afraid of the wrath that will be inflicted upon them by these people. Egalitarianism provides the moral rationale for the accumulation of power by totalitarian Democrats. Again, the problem he's saying here is that even people like Mark Levin and many other people on the right keep on reiterating that the American Revolution was all about equality and that making us all somehow equal. And because of Lincoln's speech later on during the Civil War, there's that same idea. Yet originally, when the founders established this country, they certainly didn't intend to have all people equal in the sense that people somehow are interchangeable parts and that that justice is somehow making sure that everybody gets everything in an equal manner. And we have the left now pushing this idea of equity, which is a little bit different than equality. What the founders meant that people are equal in dignity under the law and that the law should treat everybody equally in its application. They certainly didn't mean that everybody's life should turn out equally in its equal amounts of material goods and so forth, that people are different, they have different abilities, and they'll fall along all different lines And they certainly won't be equal in that respect. But this is what is being pushed anymore. And it seems as if somehow or another, the right itself goes along with this idea that the whole, the essential characteristic of America is somehow some kind of equality. And that's not what the essential characteristic was. It just means that there should be as much as possible, and it's not possible for every little thing, for people to have equal opportunities at things and be treated equally by the law. And it was not meant that somehow or another everybody is going to turn out equally in everything that they do. At any rate, it goes on, it says, the intersectional or multicultural left equates justice and democratic rule with the division of society into victims and victimizers. And this is what I was talking about earlier, the oppressed and the oppressors. For the sake of justice, distinctions are needed between those who were discriminated against and those who victimize others. In other words, there has to be somehow, if you're going to have society be made to be equal, we have to find out who are the power people and who are the people who are oppressed by that power, who are the victims and who are the victimizers. And so society is being turned into, you know, classes and groups, and those groups are being opposed to each other. But according to Paul Gottfried, and according to what you really can see, is there are a lot of people in power at the top, and Gottfried is saying capitalists themselves, who are actually using this whole idea as a means of actually ruling and using the state and the state using them to rule, and that way being the ones who have the power and the money. It says, supposedly there is a point that can be reached when all people will be interchangeable with everyone else. But until that becomes feasible, government must continue to assign access to education, employment, and social recognition according to victim ranking. Moreover, since the specifically Western Christian past was uniquely wicked in practicing discrimination, and of course this is an assumption that is fanciful and an assumption that is even laughable when you consider Christianity. Christianity was actually the religion and process that laid down the idea that people have rights in the first place, and that people have dignity as creatures of God in the first place. And it was one of the forces that began leveling societies and keeping there from being too much of a caste and too much of a distance between classes. It was Christianity that actually created the middle class that we have today. So it's almost laughable to make these charges against Christianity. But at any rate, it says, we are obliged to place the cultural artifacts and physical descendants of this uniquely evil civilization at special disadvantage in the new democratic order. And he's being sarcastic here, of course, Gottfried. Although the enlightened leaders will make us all equal in the long run, until then, it behooves us to give special benefits to designated victim groups. White male heterosexual Christians will have to live with this handicap until existing racial, gender, and ancestrally derived inequalities can be removed. And again, Paul Gottfried is being sarcastic here and making fun of this whole idea, because the fact is this is never going to happen. Once you put people in power and they have power and money, they're not going to give it up without a fight. This goal is not possible, however, unless sensitive experts who can socialize us properly exercise tight control from above. In other words, this whole business is being used as an excuse for certain power grabbers to take over, and that's exactly what this is. French TV commenter and self-described hedonist Michael Onfre has produced the study, The Theory of Dictatorships, which underscores the relevance of George Orwell's novel 1984 for making sense of a multicultural and managerial rule in first world democracies. Despite the obsolete character of much of Orwell's dystopia, Onfre writes, there are features that still seem entirely credible and frighteningly relevant. Andre focuses on the seven paths leading to dictatorship, previewed by Orwell. 1, destroying liberty. 2, impoverishing language to fit political ideology. 3, abolishing truth. 4, suppressing history. 5, denying nature. 6, propagating hate. And finally, aspiring to a universal state. So these things are still operating, and this is what power grabbers are using. And these power grabbers are not Marxists. They are actually the high capitalist people who are super rich today, the big tech, big pharma, big government, big education. All of these people are using these Marxist ideas to advance their own agenda, which is certainly not Marxist, but again, is simply to grab power and money and keep it. Like the regime in 1984, our government instrumentalizes history to make it serve ideological ends, constantly changing permissible vocabulary in its own form of newspeak. It stigmatizes the independent thought that contradicts the interests of the power elite and arouses hate against dissenters. In the postmodern configuration, hate befalls those who do not bend their knee before the revealed truth of the self-proclaimed religion of progress, Onfrey writes. The media that is allied to the state and often benefits from it churn out hate speech shamelessly. It is their stock in trade. Equally significant, the government reduces thought as it shortens the list of permissible words. No thought process is taking place when those who wish to protect themselves mumble the authorized cliches. And that's what I was pointing out that a lot of our young people are doing. They're afraid to speak up. They're afraid to really explain things. And you could see that on the news the other day when they were being interviewed on campus, that they couldn't really explain what they wanted to because they were afraid of being subject to the cancel culture. So we're going to stop here and take a break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
You most likely are familiar with Fatima and Lourdes, but did you know that the Blessed Virgin also appeared in the United States in 1859? That apparition took place near Champion, a small town in the Door Peninsula of Wisconsin. Today, Champion is home to the National Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help. Join Catholic Spirit Radio the weekend of August 14th and 15th on its pilgrimage to this shrine. Our travels will also take us to the Basilica and National Shrine of Mary, Help of Christians, at Holy Hill, also in Wisconsin. This two-day bus trip departs from Wapella, Bloomington, and El Paso. The cost for the trip is $300 per person. Make plans to join this exciting pilgrimage by visiting CatholicSpiritRadio.com or calling Kathy at 309-828-6554 or Carolyn at 309-830-4164.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. Listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. We're back from our break. Again, we're talking about Paul Gottfried's article, The Misnomer of Marxism, in Chronicles, a magazine of culture, the July issue. And we're talking about how often too many people, especially on the right, are misunderstanding what's actually going on in our country today, that it's some kind of takeover by Marxist institutions, when it's actually something that is being pushed by large capitalist powers that are already in power and using the tactics of Marxism and a lot of the believers in Marxism as a means of advancing their own agenda. It goes on here. It says, we're talking about this Michael Onfray, who is talking about how dictatorships are formed and how one of the things that is being done is actually cancel culture influencing the language in such a way that certain things are impermissible to say or speak, and it inhibits people from being able to actually talk about and understand things in the detail that they need to understand them. He goes on to Onfray's credit. He does not stigmatize postmodern, politically correct dictators as Marxists. In fact, he views the Maastricht Treaty, concluded by 12 members of the European Community in 1992, and setting up common European citizenship, currency, and immigration laws, as the evil consequence of capitalism run amok. So again, another person here is pointing out the same thing besides Paul Gottfried, that it's not Marxism or Marxist institutions that are running things, it's capitalism run amok. Its effect has been to impose a uniform culture on all Europeans while obliterating national identities. That thought police have come along in the wake of this development does not surprise Onfrey. Large corporations and the moneyed class, as well as the public administrators, are in league with the emerging dictatorship. Large corporations, lest I be accused of not taking the force of ideology seriously enough, let me stress that I am not denying the influence of multiculturalism, designated victimhood, and the rest of what the cultural left is selling. Lots of people, particularly monomaniacal intellectuals, take such stuff quite seriously, and it would be untrue to claim that the only reason true believers are running around imposing newspeak and canceling reactionaries is that government, the media, and corporations are pushing them to do so. The left's ideology has been evolving for a long time, and mixed with its ideas, one finds elements of older belief systems and even Christian heresies. Acceptance of this ideology serves emotional needs by conferring group identity, justifying failure, or allowing designated victims to vent hate. Those who buy into it are not so inclined simply because others are manipulating them. Their rulers would not likely win their support if they were not supporting ideas that these people already have. Then they wouldn't get their support if they advanced different ideologies than these people already have. For example, an ideology that stressed the value of traditional hierarchies, or one that was linked to the historical right. What elites do control is how the dominant leftist ideology is transmitted to those below them. They can promote the egalitarian doctrines embraced by masses of people in different ways. They can, for example, push a victimhood narrative selectively without appearing to indict the entire white race or all white males. But our leaders have chosen a more divisive course because they are mobilizing the obedient or indignant against those who are resisting their acquisition of more power. The rulers will not suffer from the anger aroused, since they have shrewdly insulated themselves from judgment. They are free to exploit women, amass wealth that will escape confiscation, or break the COVID restriction rules they set forth for others. They are like Soviet kleptocrats who lived in opulent dachas, second homes, gifted to the people by the government, while inciting workers' revolutions outside the communist bloc. These would-be dictators can retain the support of large blocks of the population, particularly in blue states, no matter how wickedly or hypocritically they behave. Like New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, they can perpetrate all kinds of outrages. For example, bringing about the deaths of 15,000 elderly people from COVID and being accused of sexual harassment, and yet enjoy continued popularity among voters. According to the latest polls, 49% of New York residents want Cuomo to stay in office, while only 41% want him to leave. This apparently discredited, left-leaning Democratic governor holds a 30-point lead over his likely Republican opponent. Like our president, Cuomo has profited from the protection of the obliging media, which may be the main pillar in the power elite. One wonders what new revelations about Biden and the wreckage he has caused his own electorate will have to surface to drive his popularity beneath 50%. The media happily cover for others in the ruling class, and there is nothing too appalling its members can do that will not be clarified by experts or fact-checkers or airbrushed out of the current events coverage of newspapers and television stations. Thus, anger and hate are turned not against the powerful elites, but against those who oppose their further self-aggrandizement. Pedro Gonzalez was right when he wrote in American Greatness last September that we are witnessing the ruling class striking back. And Pedro Gonzalez is also a writer for Chronicles, and he writes also for a lot of other publications, and he sometimes appears on, you know, conservative television programs as well. And Pedro himself is a Catholic and understands the religious principles that are going on in this whole thing that is dividing our country. And he goes on, he says, Paul Gottfried goes on, and he says, yet confusing this attack with a Marxist revolution is profoundly foolish, or in some cases, deliberately misleading. Our rulers are carrying out a counter-revolution while appealing to left-wing nihilists and those who mindlessly parrot their slogans. Dragging out the shop-worn phrases of the struggle against the Soviets as an explanation diverts our attention from the present grim crisis. We are not dealing with communist espionage or indoctrination by something far more dangerous. Perhaps the conservative media will start telling us the truth if they can be made to see it and their sponsors permit. And so he ends the article there. But the whole point is that what is driving this whole thing is not Marxist institutions, but actually capitalist institutions that have gained far too much power. Big tech, big pharma, they are in bed, in effect, with a certain aspect of the state, and that aspect occurs both on the left and on the right. There are a lot of people who call themselves conservative Republicans who are actually in bed with the state and with big corporations in the same way. And these corporations are super rich anymore, and some of the people who run them are super rich anymore to the extent that they have so much money or control of so much money that they can do things today that were never possible before. And they are actually driving a lot of this agenda. And a lot of the people who are on the so-called left and a lot of people who are out there in the streets doing all these things are actually being financed from a lot of this power and money at the very, very top. And these people are certainly not Marxists, and they're doing a lot of these things for their own advantage. And another aspect that we have to look into are some of the things that are being said by Pedro Gonzalez. And I want to take a look at an article that he wrote for Chronicles as well. And he's talking about the right, the conservatives. I talked on this show a number of times about the right, you know, the shadow that follows liberalism. Often conservatives and the conservative right are a shadow that often follows liberalism, in the sense that we can see here, as Pedro Gonzalez says, often the right does not stand up for its own constituents. If we take a look at what's going on the left, on the radical left, we can see that a lot of these big corporations, a lot of this big money, we can see that politicians themselves who land up on the left support their constituents even when they know those constituents are out there in the streets doing things that are simply not even supportable. You'll see the left making excuses for all of the rioting and destruction that has been going on in a lot of our cities. They'll come out and say things well, it's unfortunate that a lot of these protesters out there have to turn to such extreme measures. And what they mean by those extreme measures are actually getting people killed, injuring people, burning down buildings, looting things, and destroying property all over our cities. And they will actually justify this as there are injustices in America so great that these people are driven to do these things in order to highlight and bring out and protest the injustices that are going on. But take a look at the opposite. What happens when our own, if you look at people on the right, people who are protesting because they feel that there are a lot of unjust policies going on that are being driven by a lot of power on the left, and they go out and protest it as they did January 6th in Washington, D.C. Before things are even fully analyzed, we can see a lot of the right-wing or conservative pundits are out there condemning these people before they even know what's going on, actually going out and siding with the left in opposing so-called violence. What actually happened at Washington, D.C.? Not a lot. The protesters there may have been a little bit ragtag and disorganized, and events have maybe looked disorganized and sort of wild along those lines, but nothing really happened. It turned out that they really didn't kill anybody. They didn't have any weapons. They weren't out, destroying property. Any property that got destroyed was very, very minor, especially compared to what's going on the other side. And yet, look at the reaction to it by the left. And a lot of conservatives went right along with it, denouncing the so-called violence. But who are the conservatives appealing to? Who do they expect to step in and do anything? They're simply preaching to the choir for those people who are listening to them. And then they're standing back waiting for somebody, I guess the public in general, to somehow turn things around and right things. But the left doesn't operate that way. In order to get their way, they actually back up the people that are out in the streets making demands and rioting. Do the people on the right make any real demands? Or if they do they get supported by the people at the top or the people who are, arguing along these lines? Isn't it a little bit silly that this doesn't happen? One side supports its people. There are people right now sitting in jail. One person there, the man who dressed up like a Viking and sat in Nancy Pelosi's office and did some very crude and probably almost, maybe a man's a little crazy things, but never did anything violent, never destroyed a lot of property. He's been in jail now for 6 months, jailed. What is his crime that he should be jailed for this long in solitary confinement? And yet we don't see anybody on the right speaking up on behalf of these people. It really surprised me, myself, looking at television the other day and watching all the people on the right, the so-called conservatives, what I would call often the shadow that follows liberalism, championing the people in Cuba who are out protesting against the government there and against a lot of its totalitarian tactics. They're all championing that and saying, hey, right on and so forth. But if we have people on the right to do that in our own country, the first thing they do is come out and demand that they be squeaky clean and that they not do anything that looks wild or violent. And if they do the slightest thing that steps over the line, they immediately condemn them and say they won't support violence. Yet the other side resorts to it all the time. If something is going to happen and something is going to be done, isn't it necessary for you to have a constituency that will go out and demand that it get done? And must you not support that constituency? And if it looks like I'm taking a political side here, it might be that I am, but what I'm taking sides on is that if we are going to restore our ordered democracy and our ordered liberty, then we're going to have to restore it along lines where demands are made and these things are highlighted and people are willing to step up and speak the truth and defy the cancel culture. And anyone who does that, like the people did on January 6th, needs to be supported by those people who are always championing that cause, but never supporting the people that actually go out and try to bring it about. So that's what I'm saying. And that's exactly here what Mr. Gonzalez is saying. He says himself here that Trump himself disavowed his supporters who went into the Capitol building and by extension Babbitt, that is Ashley Babbitt, the lady that got killed. And he did that, Trump did, not once but twice. He said that the rioters will pay for the things that they did. Would the left have done something like that? It's now clear that Capitol Police allowed protesters to enter the building, that Trump supporters did not kill Officer Brian Sicknick, and that those involved are being held in terrible conditions like enemies of the state. So virtually no one justifies January 6th from the right as being a legitimate protest and a legitimate grievance against government excesses. The right doesn't seem to understand that and support these people along that line, and they should be doing that. At any rate, we're going to have to bring this to a close, but I hope this article will bring a better understanding of what's going on in the country. There are power grabbers out there. These people already possess a lot of money and a lot of power, and they are using this whole Cold War idea of Marxism and the Marxist tactics, and a lot of the people at lower levels on our university campuses and in our media and in our entertainment industry and other places, they are using these people to advance their own cause. And it's being pushed not only by a lot of rich capitalists in big corporations in our own country, but in countries around the world working together. We need to understand this and understand where this divide is coming from. And if we are going to restore ordered liberty, we are going to have to work along that line to bring that about. So at any rate, I hope this makes things a little bit clearer about what's going on. If you want to read the articles in the magazine for yourself, A Divided America, get the July issue of Chronicles. And it's put out by the Charlemagne Institute, and that originally was right up here in our own state, Rockford, Illinois, and much of it is still there. And so it's something I think that a lot of people should be aware of and read. At any rate, we're going to have to stop here and say our prayer. St. Michael the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, O Prince of the Heavenly Host, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. Amen. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com. Or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.